Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Open Mic Session. Today's topic is WebSphere Adapter for SAP. My name is Joseph Lam, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2. In today's Open Mic session, we will start off by introducing to you our panel of experts for the day. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to WebSphere Adapter for SAP. Next, our panel of experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted to us through email. Then, we will open the lines for live Q&A period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of the Open Mic session. Moving on to slide number 3. At this time, I would like to introduce to you our panel of experts for today's call. Our panel consists of Damu Fulusrami, Team Lead, WebSphere Adapter Support.
Hello, this is Damu Veluswamy. I'm working in WebSphere support for past 5 years and last 3 years in WebSphere adapter support. Prior to doing WebSphere support, I was working in developing ERP and CRM applications. I'm a certified Siebel consultant and certified support professional. I welcome you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Daimu. Next, we have Pratni Beyabu, Staff Software Engineer, WebSphere Adapter Support.
Good morning, all. This is Pavni Baipu, and I've been with the WebSphere Adapters Level 2 support team for the past 5 years, and welcome you all to the Open Mic session. And this provides a great opportunity for us to share our expertise and answer any questions about the SAP Adapter. Thanks, Joseph, and over to you.
Thank you, Pavni. And finally, we have Sunil Matthew George, Team Lead, WebSphere SAP Adapter Development.
Hello all, I'm Sunil. I've been with IBM for 6 years now, and I've been primarily involved with development of JCA WebSphere adapters. Some of the adapters I've developed are the flat files adapter, email adapter, iSeries, and right now I'm involved with the IBM WebSphere adapter for SAP. Thank you.
Now, before we get to the question and answer period, our panel of experts would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number 4, and passing the presentation over to you, Damu.
Thank you, Joseph. WebSphere adapter for SAP has evolved so much in the past. The latest version, 7.0, has many features and functions included. It is available in various runtimes like WebSphere Process Server, WebSphere Enterprise Service Bus, WebSphere Application Server, WebSphere Message Broker, and WTX, WebSphere Transformation Extender. In this Open Mic session, we will discuss any question and answers related to artifacts generation, configuration, and deployment. First, we are going to go over pre-submitted questions, then open up for Q&A in this area. Please feel free to ask any questions related to this subject. Moving on to next slide. The first question for today's call, what documents are available for WebSphere adapter for SAP? Moving to next slide. Okay, the answers. There are many information available. They are listed here. The one listed in the blue colors are having hyperlink, which will take you to the pages. Let me quickly brief each of them. Info Center contains product document. For WebSphere adapter, documents can be found under each development tools like VID and WMB Toolkit. TechNote and Flash. Time to time, adapter development and support team release these documents to communicate latest update and resolution to issues. Developer Work Form. Many experts joined in this tool to discuss all adapter-related queries and topics. There are vast amount of useful information found here. White papers. IBM experts release white paper on document with complete solution and for sample scenarios. IEA, IBM Education Assistance. This is an audio presentation found for various topics related to many adapters. WSTE. This is a great medium to obtain product knowledge and also ask questions with the expert, as it is an interactive section. Replay options also available for many of them which are completed earlier. Support portal. Support portal has been modified and evolved so much, and recently it was introduced used with many features and easy usability. You could find information related to the interested components. For example, you can set your interested component is WebSphere adapter for SAP. And when you're searching on it, it's going to bring all the related information to WebSphere adapter for SAP. I would also like to introduce one more tool, which is ISA Lite. I have not included here, but it is available to collect the data when anyone experiences problem. This tool collects the logs and all the related information for the particular component and uploads it to IBM support website. Moving on to next slide. Question number two, I'll hand this over to Pavni to continue.
Thanks, Damo. This is Pavni again, and I'll be covering the next couple of questions. And right now we are on slide number 7, which has a question number 2, which is, what are the new features included in the WebSphere adapter for SAP version 7.0? And to answer this question, let's move on to slide number 8. Okay, in version 7.0, there have been several enhancements that have been added to improve the business flexibility and also provide a better user experience. Included below are some of them. First one being the support for the synchronous callback interface, which is basically the BAPI inbound and the synchronous. So just to explain more about this, as we all know, like SAP has a capability where it can call functions on the RFC servers. So basically here what happens is by using the WebSphere SAP adapter node, the message flow can act as an RFC server and can basically receive the function calls from the SAP. And in order to support the synchronous callback, the BAPI inbound, a new node also has been added, which is called the SAP reply node. So whenever a function call is made, what happens is the BAPI import parameters are received by the adapter SAP input node, and then which is basically propagated to the SAP input node. And then what happens is with the help of the SAP reply node, we can basically send the BAPI export parameters to the SAP reply node, and it is used to reply back to the SAP function call. So in this way, we support the BAPI inbound synchronous with the message broker. And just to mention, this function or the feature has already been included in the other runtimes prior to version 7. So that's about it. And coming to the next one, about the number of operations limitations. So for those of us who have already used versions of the adapter prior to 7.0, we know that with respect to BAPI, there has been a limitation where we can only configure 4 BAPIs for outbound processing. That was because the BAPIs were mapped to the create, update, retrieve, and the delete operations. But with version 7.0, the default operation is process, and the limitation has been removed. And it is possible to configure as many number of BAPIs as possible for outbound processing. And similarly, talking about the number of operations limitation, we had a similar limitation with respect to the ALE module as well, where we were able to map the incoming IDOCs, the number of incoming IDOCs to the operations. Only the limitation was we could only map only 3 IDOCs, as they were, that is, to the create, update, and the delete operations. So this limitation has been removed, and right now with version 7.0, we can basically map as many IDOCs, incoming IDOCs as possible. And not only that, but for each of the operations, we can assign as many number of combinations of the message type and the receiver type. So that's about the second one. Coming to the next one, the SAP HA environment support. So with version 7.0, we basically support the active HA cluster topology. So to explain more on that, what it is like we can deploy an SAP application onto 2 servers. So 2 servers and concurrently receive requests from the SAP server that is basically providing a high availability environment. So as we know, in version 6.1 or 6.2 earlier to 7.0, what we had was we had this TRFC component, which basically that used to make sure that the incoming IDOCs or the BAPI calls are basically delivered only once and there was no duplication. So this was basically the way it was achieved was by using associating a TID or the transaction ID with each delivery. And this said, assume there's a scenario where the adapter loses or the connection with the SAP before a confirmation was given. So in order to handle that scenario, the TID was basically stored in a TID store or a persistent store. So in 6.1, what was happening was in a high availability environment where we had 2 applications deployed onto 2 servers, and listening on the same RFC program ID. So since each of them used to have their own TID stores, so in that case, what happens is one of the brokers loses its connection to the SAP before it receives a confirmation about the delivery. So confirmation about the delivery, what happens is then at that time, the SAP would basically try to redeliver that event. So in that case, because both the brokers are using 2 different TID stores, so even though the IDOC was already delivered to the first broker, the second broker is not aware of it and it accepts the redelivery of the SAP from the SAP. So this limitation or this has been overcome in version 7.0 by basically moving the TID store to a third-party queue manager, and that is basically shared across the brokers. So in that way, even if one of them loses the connection, the second one exactly picks up from the state where it was left out from the first one. So that's the way the high availability or the active HAHA support was provided and incorporated into the SAP adapter. And now moving on to the fourth one, the iterative discovery. So often, to explain more on this, often in business scenarios, what it would require changes on the EIS data structures end. So in order to incorporate those changes, earlier to version 7, what we had to do was we'll have to totally reconfigure the and basically and or if that would affect the existing artifact. So with version 7.0, we can either add new objects to the existing objects or delete an object from an object set or basically modify without actually affecting the existing objects. So only we'll be touching whatever is needed and we don't have to totally reinvent the wheel and try to rediscover everything again if something changes on the SAP end. So not only just discovery, but we are, with 7.0, we also support iterative deployment. What it means is in scenarios, assume where the application or is just acting as a gateway to the EIS. So if and so the what it is, what's possible is we can add new services, we can add support to basically call the new services or create new event type, event handlers to handle new event types on the SAP and the EIS end without actually affecting the existing artifacts. So not just this four, but there have been some other features that have been added just to mention that are not included in the slide but would like to mention them. One of them being like in versions earlier to 7.0, basically, remember we have the IDOCs which have our unreleased segments. Sometimes we need those unreleased segments in order which provide a way for us to share more information. So this from version 7.0, this automatically detects IDOCs with our unreleased segments and generates the business objects. So earlier we had to select certain parameters and make sure so that it detects earlier segments. So this has been removed and the adapter takes care of it automatically. The other one that has been added was basically the ALE audit support for the unparsed IDOCs. So we can ALE audit can be configured for both for the IDOC packet as a whole or for each of the IDOCs in the IDOC packet. So, and not just this, but some of the additional options also have been added. One of them is basically a wait on BAPI commit call. So when this option is basically a Boolean value, so when set to true, what happens is the adapter waits before it issues a commit call. And it waits until all the processing in the transaction is completed. And if this is not set, it just commits asynchronously without waiting for the processing to be complete. There's also one more thing that's been added was the retry EIS connection on startup. So what it does is like when this option is selected, it tries to reconnect in case of system connection failures to the EIS during the adapter startup time. So these are some of the enhancements that have been included in the version 7.0. So now let's move on to next slide to look at the question number 3. The question number 3 is, what are the steps that we should I take to apply the fixes? So I'm on slide number 9, and to answer this question, let's move on to slide number 10. Most of the times, there are like two kinds of fixes, basically the fixed paths, and the other one is the interim fixes or the test fixes, which the support team provides when PMRs are open for any issues that are defects. So to answer first about the fixed paths, so as we all know, like the adapters are no longer available by themselves, so they are basically coupled or available along with the respective corresponding runtimes and the toolkits. So in order to upgrade to any adapter fix pack, basically the toolkit or the corresponding runtime has to be upgraded to get the upgraded fix pack. So coming to the next one about the iFixes. So whenever we provide an iFix, we most of the time receive questions about how to apply the what's the process to apply the iFixes and questions around that area. So generally, whenever we provide iFix, it includes a README file. So the README file generally has the steps on basically how to apply the fix, both for development time fixes as well as the runtime fixes. So for development time fixes, for all the toolkits that are basically WID, RAD, or be it my WebSphere Message Broker Toolkit. What we do is basically we provide a RAR file. So we'll have, in order to apply that RAR file, we'll have to basically go to the toolkit installation directory and we'll have a resource adapters and then navigate to the SAP folder. So, and then basically back up the existing RAR file and then replace it with the fix that we provide. That's one way of doing it. And the other way to do it is directly updating it in the workspace. So assume there's an existing workspace with a certain RAR file. So in order to update that particular RAR file with the provided fix, what we can do is basically remove that particular existing RAR file from the Java build path and the dependencies. And then next, after removing it from the dependencies, remove the existing RAR file. Then import the new RAR file or the interim fix that was provided by the from the support. Import it and then add it back to the build path and the dependencies and build the project. So in that way, you can import the new RAR file that was provided by the support into the workspace. Next, coming to how to apply the runtime fixes. So for the runtime fixes, it can be applied either by updating in the toolkit and then deploying the project onto the server, or another way is to basically updating it. For example, for VID and for the process server was runtimes, you can go to the admin console, go to the resource adapters and basically browse to the file, the new file, and then update it through the admin console. And for the message broker, what we can do is basically we provide the runtime files as jar files, and they're packaged in a folder called package_wmb.zip file. So extract the zip files and copy this for all these jar files that are provided in the zip file, and then go to the runtime installation directory, and then navigate to adapters, prereqs, jars, and then copy all these files onto the into that folder. So once you copy this file, then restart the broker in order for this fixes to take into effect. So this concludes the question number 3, and at this point I would like to turn it over to Sunil, and let's move on to slide number 11.
Thank you, Pavani. Let's have a look at the next question. The question is, how do I set up load balancing in the adapter, both for inbound and outbound? This is applicable in scenarios where you have, say, a high load on both SAP and the adapter flows. Let's say you're using an ALE flow where the IDOCs are flowing from SAP into the SAP adapter, and you have multiple application servers in SAP, and you want the adapter to be able to successfully receive IDOCs from each of those application servers. For the answer, could we move to slide 12, please? In the adapter's discovery wizard, there is an option called as use load balancing. So if you want to make use of the load balancing feature, enable the select this checkbox, and in the advanced tab, you will see three properties which are mandatory, which is basically the message server host, the logon group, and the SAP system ID. These are required information so that the adapter can make sure that the load balancing functionality works fine. During the inbound, the adapter creates listeners for as many application servers are present in SAP. So if you have the listeners as two, and if you have three application servers, so there will be two listeners for each of the application servers. Question. So when the requests come through, they'll be routed through each of these listeners. And during the outbound, the flow which comes from the adapter into SAP, the adapter sends the request to the message server host, which in turn takes care of routing the request to each of the available application servers to handle them. So this is the way you can achieve both inbound-outbound load balancing. Could we move to slide 13, please? The question here, number 5, is how do I enable passing of values between BAPI invocations in a local transaction scenario? Let's say, for example, you have a business case for which you need to execute 3 BAPIs in a sequence, and either all should be successful or all should get rolled back as a unit. And not only that, let's say BAPI 1 returns something in the as the output, and you want to use that as input to the next BAPI, BAPI 2. And then the result of BAPI 2, you want to use it as input for BAPI 3. And all of this should get executed in a single atomic unit, and success or failures, if it happens at any point, they should get rolled back or committed. So let's move to slide 14 to see how it can be done. In the WebSphere message broker, you have what is called as the transaction mode. To enable that to yes, you could carry on multiple invocations with the adapter. So you could, say, invoke 3 BAPIs or N number of BAPIs, and the adapter would start calling one after the other, and you could take the output of the first BAPI and feed it as input to the next one using ESQL scripts or any other mapping mechanisms. And whenever the MQ completes the transaction, then the transaction is committed into SAP. So at any point in between, the changes are not reflected in SAP. And at the end, when the commit call happens, you will see that the changes are reflected in SAP. Or if a failure happens, they will get rolled back and nothing would get updated to SAP. So this is the way you can achieve this passing of values between BAPIs in a local transaction context, because the SAP adapter supports the local transaction. Let's move to slide 14, please. Let's move to the slide 15. Yeah. The question 6 is, when should I use the node level versus application adapter deployment models? In the WebSphere process server or WebSphere application server, you could either embed the adapter as part of the applications, which is called as the embedded mode, or you could have a central instance of the adapter installed. It's called as the node level mode. You can choose the node level mode when you have multiple applications built, but all of them want to use the same adapter. That's when you have a central instance of the adapter, but N number of applications can make use of the same adapter. When can you use embedded modes? You could use the embedded mode when you just have a single application that makes use of the adapter, and nobody else is interested in making use of the adapter. And also, coming back to node level, you could use node level when you want ease of use and maintenance. For example, you want to change a configuration value, or you want to update the adapter. So all of this helps. I mean, when you use the node level, it helps really in these scenarios. So with this, let's move to slide number 16, please. So this is essentially what I had explained in the previous slide. These are the answers. That when several applications want to use a single adapter, then you can use a node level. And when you want the maintenance and administration at a central place, you could use a node level. Let's move to the next slide, please, slide 17.
Thank you to our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this point in time, Vicky, we would like to open the lines for live Q&A period.
At this time, we have no questions.
Thanks again for your participation. At this point in time, I'm going to pass the presentation back to our panel of experts to go over some additional questions and responses they have prepared for the audience. Please go ahead, panel.
This is Damo Veluswamy. Thank you, Joseph. Now, we will review some frequently reported issues with IBM support and the solution provided. The question, how to handle RFC system failure? RFC system, the answer is, RFC system failure exceptions are mainly SAP-related exceptions. WebSphere adapter for SAP uses SAP JCO to connect and exchange data with the SAP EIS. For example, when there is a communication error with the SAP application, then RFC system failure exception is thrown, saying connection lost. We strongly suggest to engage SAP basis admin to find out the root cause of this error. To find out more detail, you could also enable RFC log, which will help to find the root cause. To enable the logs, you could turn on the SAP JCO logs. There are two levels in the SAP JCO tracing, RFC tracing and JCO tracing. RFC tracing is from the DLL and SO files, which is native library tracing. JCO tracing is at the Java code, which invokes the libraries. This should provide a lot of details on the RFC system failure, which helps the SAP basis admin to find out the root cause. To activate the JCO tracing, you could use the parameters, the JVM parameters, -djco.trace_level, specify the integer number for which level you would like to get. Also, to specify the path, you could do the same thing, -djco.trace_path, and specify the path. These are command line parameters. And you could also engage or obtain support from SAP for further help. Let me turn this over to Pawnee for the next question. It's all yours, Pawnee.
Thanks, Damo, for handing it over. And I would like to basically cover a few other topics around which we see a lot of activity or PMRs from our customers. So the first one is around the AEP interface. So recently we've been seeing quite a bit of activity around this interface. So AEP, or the Advanced Event Processing Interface, it's basically a sequel for the ABAP interface that was available in the WBI SAP world. So this interface, as we know, basically uses transports. So transports files are nothing but those are the script files, which basically provide a way to create the event table, which the adapter pulls for in the AAP interface, and also to create all the other infrastructure that is required to support the AAP interface. So there have been a couple of issues around these transports. For example, some of them are like around logging, so that the transport logging was not being logged to correctly to the correct log file. And also, there have been a couple of issues where whenever a delete event operation or an event from the event queue or an archive table was done, it was not being deleted correctly. So these issues were, in fact, identified with the transports and have been fixed. So in addition to the transport issues, there have been a couple of issues where on the adapter end as well. So for the AEP interface, some of them were basically, so whenever a field was not populated and it was being sent to the adapter, so it was adapter was incorrectly populating it with CXignore. It was in hard-coded value, so which was incorrect and which was identified and thereby fixed. The other issue that was fixed with the AP interface was where there were pre-existing events in the event table, and when the adapter is starting up, it was not picking up those events. So even this issue was identified and fixed. So if you run into any of these issues, please open up PMR so that the support will be able to help you get the fix for the corresponding versions. Now, having done with the AEP, one other topic around which we see quite a few PMRs are around the SAP maintenance area. So to explain on that, so the questions most of the times that we see are, does adapter have any options to handle if it loses connection to SAP, or if SAP is brought down for a scheduled maintenance and brought back up again? So yes, to answer that question, yes, adapter does have options in order to retry the connection to the EIS. So for inbound, there are like two properties. One of them is a max number of retries, which is basically set to zero by default. And when it is zero, what it does is like basically tries to connect, establish or retry the connection to the SAP or the EIS indefinitely until a connection is established. And there's also another parameter called the time between the retries. So the default value is 60,000 milliseconds. So it is basically the time interval between that adapter takes between the retries. So using these two parameters, the inbound tries to establish a connection to the EIS if the connection is lost, or say the SAP is down for a scheduled maintenance. Similarly, even for outbound, with process server and VoS, we do have this parameter called maximum number of retries for system connection failure. So when this property is basically set to a value, the default is basically zero. So when this value is set to zero, the EIS connection is not validated and the outbound operation is just carried out. But when this value is set to about something greater than zero, what happens is it basically, whenever an outbound request is received by the adapter, so before executing the outbound operation, it will basically validate the EIS connection. So if the connection is valid, it will go ahead and execute the operation. But if it is not valid, it will basically invalidate that particular managed connection and then create a new managed connection, that is basically a new physical connection to the EIS. So that's the way it's handled, the outage scenarios are handled in the outbound scenarios for process server and VoS runtimes. And for MB or the message broker, the outbound until I think from 6103 onwards, this has been handled. But the outbound, it was basically handled at the expense of the first request. So what was happening was, whenever the SAP connection is lost during the outbound, and say it comes back after some time, so the first request that was sent after the SAP system comes up would fail, and that's when the adapter or the broker would realize that it's an invalid connection, and then from the second, and will try to create a new connection. So, and from the second request on, all the requests would go ahead successfully. But even this limitation has been removed, and the broker code from the latest fix pack of 6.1 has been fixed so that even the first request doesn't fail, and the broker automatically takes care and of all the events in case of outage in the outbound scenarios. Having talked about the options, would like to also mention some of the best practices to follow in case of SAP maintenance. So to handle, so that the adapter handles it correctly and not too many exceptions are thrown. So a good idea is to basically, if you know there's going to be an SAP maintenance, so stop the adapter or the application that has the adapter, and then stop the SAP server and bring it down for SAP maintenance. So once the SAP maintenance is done, and the SAP is back up again, then you can go ahead and start the application or the adapter again. So in this way, we can be sure that not too many exceptions are thrown and the adapter handles it in a clean way. So that's topic number two. And now jumping on to the next topic, one other topic that we often see issues are related to the message broker, and it's basically around what we call the MQSI Create Configurable Service. So what it is to explain more on that, you know, generally, in order to edit the adapter connection properties, there are two ways to do it. One is either basically edit the adapter component itself, or the other way is to do it using the MQSI Create Configurable Service command. So the advantage of doing it is basically the adapter need not be redeployed once the properties have been changed. So this is the command that can be executed on the message broker command console, and it is basically it can be edited at runtime itself, and it doesn't require redeploy of the adapter again. And once we change the parameters using this command, however, it requires a restart of the execution group or the broker, so in order for the properties to take into effect. So this property is most of the times useful when you want to move the or basically transition the code from one environment to the other, that is from, say, development environment to the test environment to the production environment. Without requiring, it can be easily achieved without requiring to edit the message flows and rebuilding the flows and deploying it. So that's one advantage of using this command. There have been a couple of other issues related to RFC trace path with message brokers, wherein in the toolkit, if you wanted to point it to a Unix location, it defaults back to a Windows path. This is when this defect has been identified and is being worked on. But as a workaround, we can use the MQSI Create Configurable Service command in order to edit the RFC trace path location to point to a Unix location. So one other issue that's been fixed related to this MQSI Configurable command is related to the RFC program ID. So there was an issue that was identified where the RFC program ID that was mentioned in this particular command was not taking into effect. So this has been fixed in the latest fix pack of 6.1 of the message broker. If we want to get the fix for this particular issue, please contact support, and so that we'll be able to provide the correct version. Version of the fix for the appropriate message broker or the toolkit version. One other thing, new feature that's been added to the MQSI Create Configurable Service command was until the 6.107, which is basically the latest fix pack, until then only the basic connection parameters like the application host, gateway server host, username, all these properties were supported, but from latest fix pack onwards, support for the load balancing parameters like the logon group, SAP system ID, message server host have also been included in the latest fix pack for the MQSI Create Configurable Service command. So having talked about these three topics, I would like to turn it over to Sunil to discuss few other topics.
Thank you, Pavani. Some of the questions I have are, number one, what are the advantages of enabling the event store option during failures in event recovery? When you configure, say, the BAPI, or when you configure the ALE inbound, you have an option where you can enable the event store. So what happens here is the adapter stores the transaction ID in the database. So how this is helpful is that when you have a failure and when there is a resubmission from SAP, either manually or through automated scripts, when the transaction ID comes back, the adapter checks if this transaction is already delivered, and if so, it doesn't further deliver it on. So this avoids duplicate event delivery. That's one of the few advantages we have there, and it is very significant in case where duplicate events can give rise to problems. Second question is, when can we trim ALE field data and how can it be configured? If you have IDOC data coming in and there are a lot of spaces in the actual data and you are not interested in the spaces, you could always configure that in the adaptive wizard. There is a checkbox called Trim ALE Data. Once you select that, all the spaces are trimmed, or you can even uncheck it so that the spaces do not get trimmed. So these are only the leading spaces that get trimmed or not trimmed. The trailing spaces are always trimmed. So the next question I have is, when can we use the transaction version of the adapter and when should we use the non-transaction version of the adapter? And the answer to that is, whenever you want the adapter to participate in the transaction which is controlled by the runtime, like say the process server or WAS, you should use the transaction version of the adapter. And the non-transaction version can be used either when you do not want the adapter to participate in the transaction or when you have, say, something like a non-managed environment and not part of any runtime. The question number four I have is programming model differences with respect to adapters in WAS, WebSphere Process Server, WebSphere Enterprise Service Bus, and WebSphere Message Broker. So fundamentally, the underlying adapter used in all these runtimes are the same. It's only the programming model that changes. For example, in the WebSphere Process Server, the BAPI is represented as a service data object. You have the schema there. You can enter the date values as per the schema, and the adapter understands that. When you move to the WebSphere Application Server, WAS, the adapter represents the BAPI or the IDOC data as Java beans, because the primary programming model of WAS is Java beans. When you move to Message Broker, the adapter represents data as message sets or MXSDs, because fundamentally WebSphere Message Broker deals with programming flows in terms of message sets. So you have your BAPI represented as message sets. So basically, these are just the programming model differences, but underlying adapters just the same. Question number five and the final question that I have is, how does one move smoothly between dev, test, and production without having the overhead of configuration? For example, if I have a configuration done for the dev environment and I'm moving over to test and to production, and if the values of, say, the host name or the username, password changes as I move across systems, do I have to manually go and tweak the configuration? So the answer is no. You could use WebSphere variables. For example, in the host names field, you could enter the WebSphere variable. And what happens is the WebSphere variable can remain same in the configuration, but you could set the value differently in the test and production. So if I have a WebSphere variable like host underscore name, I could equate that to a different machine in test and to another machine in production, but I don't have to touch the configuration of the adapter, because the WebSphere variables can be part of the managed connection factory properties or the activation spec properties. And in that way, you just have to deploy the adapter, and based on what you set as values for the variables, the adapter runtime would assume those values. So this is very useful when you switch between these production and test systems. So with that, I am done with the questions, and I hand it over to Joseph.
Thank you again to our panel of experts for going over some additional questions. At this time, I would like to move on to slide number 19 and pass the presentation to Damu for a summary of today's session.
Thank you, Joseph. In this open mic session, we have covered reference to many knowledge resources and self-help tools. Hope this helps the audience to review and utilize before opening PMRs with IBM support. We have looked into this open mic presentation, the new functions introduced in the version 7, how to apply fixes, setting load balancing, node level and application level deployment, passing values between BAPI invocations in local transaction, and also we looked into the frequently experienced AEP issues, how to handle RFC system failure, some of the best practices when SAP brought down for maintenance, enabling the event store options during failures and event recovery, and how when to use TX and non-TX RAR files. Hope this information is very useful to you. Our panel is very pleased for this opportunity to share the knowledge on the WebSphere adapter for SAP. We believe this will help to resolve and guide in setting up the adapter without opening PMR with IBM support. Thank you. Back to you, Joseph.
Thank you, Damu, for a great summary. At this time, we will conclude the open mic session.